I'll start this off. I have a problem with storage on my phone, and that I just keep downloading memes and I don't delete them, so that when I need to download something for work, I have to go through all the memes I've saved and delete the ones that I don't use. And there are some that I don't use fairly often, but I still keep them just for the lols. And one of them is our good friend Ryan Mancini with his leg up on a keg that says, "You've been Mancini'd."
Oh, hell yeah. I sent that to you.
You did. And I have kept it ever since. I don't have very many occasions to use it, but when the day comes, I will scroll through my camera roll and be ready.
It's just, it's photos like that that make me think we are not as spry and agile as we once were. It kind of makes me sad, because it's like, that photo was taken at a time where arguably it is the highlight of most undergraduate students' careers, if that wasn't already obvious. You can get a lot of context clues from that picture alone. Like, you don't need the you don't need the intent of the keg or the organization behind having said keg in said backyard. But I don't know. I get sad. Like, the good times are behind us. What went through your mind as you took that picture, other than, hey, I'm going to be that guy?
Well,
chug, 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 chug.
No. I mean, I'm trying to even remember the context of it, because I can't believe it. Well, actually, no, it would be 9 years. I was going to say 10. It's probably past 9 years since that picture was taken. Jeez. I don't know. I literally think I just saw it, walked up to it. You know, it was daytime. I had my shades on.
You went up to a bro and was like, "Hey, man, take this picture. This will be sick."
I think I just wanted to feel like Captain Morgan for a moment. I just wanted to, like, I don't know, put my foot up on it. It was daytime. I was all dressed up for meeting. I had my skinny tie, which if this episode is about, you know, a little tease of the mythology that is yours truly,
you
Mancini's mythology. Yeah,
that was,
tease me, mommy.
Hang on, what, mommy?
I said, tease me, mommy.
Okay, because I was literally about to say that tie belonged to my mother.
Oh,
that was her skinny tie from like the 80s when no one was wearing a skinny tie.
I gotta
yeah,
say,
geez,
come
I,
on,
I found
just,
it.
Just go so, full so, on tie, just or just so, like, wrap yourself in fabric at that point, put on a noose.
So there, the picture's go. Baffling to say the least. Not only is it a skinny tie, but there's no tie clip, it doesn't even reach your, you know, belt buckle crotch area, which is how far down the tie is supposed to go. Your faux Rolex watch, for one.
It's a Seiko.
It's a Seiko this. And not only that, but I think it's sort of just general knowledge at that point. If you've ever, ever spent time in an undergraduate fraternity house, you know the amount of trash and just human filth piles up.
I can smell it now.
We couldn't even clean the backyard, could we? I mean, there's the grill. There's pieces of plastic from what I can only assume are beer can remains. And, you know, if we're going to save the turtles, we're not doing a good job. Plants not watered. Belts don't match the shoes. You're just a mess.
Hey, I look better than everybody else. I'll take it.
That's not saying much. Half the people showed up in just polos. Like, there's no, there was not an attire for a meeting, even though it was explicitly stated there was one. But, you know, I do have to ask, because this episode is rather special. And going back to the episodes where I kind of took the helm and regaled some of my stories, primarily in college, because really, what other high points have we had in our lives? Just dead air, you know, pause for comedic effect. I want to get your perspective on life as we know it, life as you knew it before the podcast, before us. Yeah. I mean, it's it. What are the words of wisdom that you can project to those younger than you? Other than don't sleep with your shoes on and don't room with a guy who can't bother to lock his door.
Matt, he's talking about a real thing. I'm curious, like, do you mean, like, from that period, what do I have to offer to somebody that was, like, that's also going through something vaguely similar, or...
Okay, I'll narrow it down. Schools are opening back up, and I guess one example would be recruitment to join certain organizations is at an all-time high because they have to make up for the deficit of people graduating. So if you could give any smarmy, glossy-eyed kid any advice when stepping foot on a college campus, what would you recommend being, let's see, you graduate from college around about 22, 23 years of age, 7 years past your prime? What can you give advice on that?
Well, like whatever experiences you're about to indulge in college, you know, it's you're going to have probably a fairly decent time. Yeah, I know a lot of people that definitely struggled from the standpoint of where they came from, you know, still living with family, helping to raise money for siblings and also for their home. I mean, hell, I know people like that in Massachusetts and they're well past being in college, but keep an open mind. Like, I don't know what to say. That doesn't sound cliche.
Well, you could put your own personal spin on it and be like, dude, don't do this. Like, I'm not expecting you to, like, exacerbate it because knowing you as you are, you're pretty level-headed. I don't expect you to go balls to the wall like perhaps some people we know. Obviously, don't do drugs if you don't know the person. I'm kidding. But
that's a good way to start an adventure.
I suppose if there was a defining moment for you in college,
yes,
whether it be through people you met or the experiences that you've had, I guess something that really stuck with you 7 years later, is there anything that you can espouse?
Really, there's three things. One is, and it's less of a recommendation or less of a, I don't know. If anything, it taught me exactly what the fraternity and what my college department claimed it would help facilitate, but never did, which is realizing that the connections that you make on so many different levels can all eventually converge into something, I don't want to say powerful, but certainly something that can cause a stir. Namely, having resources from, you know, people I knew in my freshman year Chicano Studies class. Meanwhile, the best former president our fraternity ever had. Meanwhile, some random ass guy who mentioned Mother Teresa in a poli-sci class, and I had to be like, she was the ghoul of Calcutta. And then also having the know-how and the knowledge to follow up upon previous reporting that had been done under Andrew's watch for the Sundial, it all led to a moment where so many points in my life crossed over into one thing that I was in the middle of making, and it turned into probably one of the most, at that time, one of the most controversial things that were published by the school newspaper about the student body government. And even the president at that time literally pulled a Trump and was like, you know, Ryan Mancini, bad hombre, you know, can't be trusted. He's the fake news, everybody. You can't trust him. You can't trust him. He writes a story. He doesn't interview me. Why didn't he interview? I did try to call you, Savog. I did try to call you, but you blew me off every fucking time you could. Meanwhile, my friends Edwin, Jonathan, and Jonathan literally stepped up and gave voice to what ended up being a shit show for the newspaper. But I even told them when they were like, you know, what do you have to say for yourself? It's like, well, first of all, you guys should have edited this, and you clearly did. Second of all, and this is something that I find troubling with a lot of newspapers, especially those that and news websites that experience a lot of turnover, which is if you don't have any institutional knowledge, you're screwed. So having me come back from an old era, from the age of when Andrew was editor-in-chief, and then to come back and follow up on something that he oversaw that these people didn't know anything about, hey, people are reading you. Bad news is good news. So basically, it's to show that despite the fact that you have all these expectations, at some point it is all going to pay off for you in the end. The second thing would probably just simply have to be that you never know what to expect when you're in college, but certainly you never imagine expecting yourself either finding people that you want to continuously talk to for the rest of your life, but also, you know, I mean, I'll straight up say it. At the time, did I think I found love? Yeah. And I know friend of the show Kenny Barry has said, looking back on that moment for me was probably the happiest he had ever seen me, and it was probably one of the happiest moments I had ever been at that time. Did that last forever? No. If anything, it opened me up in a way that I couldn't have anticipated, simply because freshman year I had a death in the family. Sophomore year I was still myself in a lot of ways, but I was a lot more guarded than I've ever been.
Right, yeah.
And then finally it was like around Halloween 2014 that I just said, screw it. I'm just going to go back to being me. And, you know, showed up as Kramer at the Halloween party, and all the girls at the party were like, who are you supposed to be? And I'm like, Cosmo Kramer, you know, and they were like, what? And I'm like, oh, from Seinfeld, you know. Oh, yeah, Jerry, he's my neighbor across the hall. And they're looking at me like, what's
just
Seinfeld?
It's just a different era. I think you were capitalizing too much on the... Definitely don't give up being who you are, but in the case of college, where I think a lot of people's MO is to either get drunk, I'm not even going to say get girls, just get the preferred sex at that point, and be the big man on campus, you know, you kind of have to adapt. But you never did you? Which is good. You stuck to your guns.
You know, I still vividly remember, and this was going back to an episode where we talked about Bill Maher. I vividly remember seeing an episode of his show where he compared joining a fraternity to being a part of ISIS. where he said,
yes. the memories. Yeah, I love that. Really?
Yeah, because he was like, fraternity, you know, they make you want to only agree with them on everything and disregard everything you believed before. And when I saw that, I was like, sorry, if a fraternity made me do that or ever made me feel that way, I would have left.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm too set in my ways, because I mean, even since then, I know I've changed, and I know my views on everything have changed since. I mean, for crying out loud, I'd say they've changed in the last year, but I never felt like I needed to become a different person.
Like, doesn't have any fucking friends.
Right. I mean, you know, and this is the guy that, like, who's he catering to? I mean, I still remember joining the fraternity and, like, in the very, very beginning, like, you know, I just got my first job ever working under Andrew, and like showing up to a Rush event, and they asked me where I worked, and I said, well, I'm on the school newspaper, which became like a meme in the fraternity, because people would be like, oh, that's Ryan, he'll talk all about the Sundial. And it's like, well, guys, when people ask me, and this will be the final time I ever say this, so if anyone from the fraternity hears this, this is your last chance to hear this. So,
did I ever ask you this? I don't think I ever did, but I feel like I'm hearing this for the first time.
Well, when we met,
you're building it up to be. Yeah,
I was writing for it, but I wasn't an employee. By that point, I was working in a restaurant.
Right.
And literally after I got out of work one day, that was when they called me in about that investigative piece. And I just showed up in my jeans and my black button-up shirt and my grimy black restaurant shoes. And they're like, you know, what is this? And I'm like, it's the story you wanted. What happened was people would ask me where I work. I'd say I was an editor on the newspaper. They'd ask me what I did. I told them. And then we moved on. But it became like an inside joke where it's like, oh, he's going to talk all about it. And it's like, guys, if somebody asks you that you work at In-N-Out, and one person definitely did.
Oh.
I don't think people were going to be like, oh, he just talks about working at In-N-Out. No, it's an innocent, it's a normal, simple, innocent question. Like, you ask somebody where they work. Oh, I work at Krispy Kreme. Oh, I work at, I don't know, Burger King. Oh, I work at Bass Pro Shop. I don't know. Like, it's just, it was so bizarre. But when I said where I worked, it caused this, like, rift with this one guy who, to this day, has just become a right-wing nutbag, as far as I'm concerned. I had respect for him, but he's just gone so bloody off the rails. Like, he just got so aggressive and was like, you know, oh, well, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? Yeah. And I'm like, what? I want to join. I'm not a spy. I'm not a mole.
I'm wanting to pay dues so that this house could stay on campus, because apparently we're hurting for money. Never mind the double secret probation. You know, so it's like, and it boggles the mind too, because you think at these like rush events, when you're actually wanting to get to know someone, you wouldn't be so set in your ways as a rusher versus a rushee, that when you pop the question of what do you do for a living, or what interests you, or what else is there to ask other than the vapid question of, oh yeah, you play any sports? Because I heard that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, so the expectation is there of either like sports, finance bro, tech bro, or, what's your music taste? You know, and then silently judging you as if it was a political party when you ask the question.
What's your favorite beer? What's your favorite drink?
They all achieve the same result.
Yep.
Shitting in about 2 hours, if not coming out the other end. So. I don't know. I never expected people who were asking and inquiring and hoping for a difference of opinion to be so taken aback by the fact that it was a difference in opinion. It's like when people knew that I, at the time, was big in illustration. Oh, really? Like, as if I'm a foreign, I'm just a foreign individual. Yeah. Like, I may as well have been speaking Mandarin at that point. And it's like, is it really that bizarre on a college campus, sizably big, I would say. It's not, you know, acres and acres that Stanford boasts, but, you know, you could get lost on your orientation.
Oh, yeah. That's why my sister took that job.
Is it really so far out of the realm of possibilities to think that there is someone studying a different discipline than you? You know, it's not to say that the disciplines in the house were oversaturated, but I will say that there were a lot of people either studying business, studying law, studying, you know, kind of basic STEM degrees. You definitely have those who are more artistic and went on creative ventures. But I will say in the 3 years that I was in, maybe you would have maybe an influx of 5 to 10 people max throughout those years that took on those creative ventures. Either that, or they were so stoned out of their minds that was the only thing they were interested in. It's like, yeah, let's put on some Frank Ocean and finger paint. Okay, cool. Great. Like, yeah, way to spend a Wednesday. I'm like, all right. I mean, I guess this is fun.
Some of the information I'll provide is public. So I'm not going to be, I'm definitely being careful with what I'm saying here, but I will say that at that time there was a heightened sense of fear, frankly, because there had been a hazing incident that summer that resulted in somebody dying. And years later, a friend of the show, personal friend of mine and Sebastian's, Mauricio Romo, prior guest. It was years later I found out that he actually knew this guy, knew him personally. So that was something that shook the school to its core before classes had even started. And I'm honestly, I am sure that the school was looking into it. And then, you know, the newspaper, for the most part, was intended to be completely independent from the school, but not the whole school didn't get that. So I understood the apprehension, but at the same time, hey, I don't work for the administration. I work in journalism, so that means I can keep a secret or two. And on top of all that, like, I don't know, I want to join you guys because you're cool and let's have fun and blah, blah, blah. It's really simple. And again, I never felt pressured into becoming a different person or ever feeling like I had to change my ways. I mean, for goodness sake, when I moved into the house, somebody left an empty small bookshelf. And boy, did I fill that thing up with books. So, and I still
specify with books.
I still remember one of the much older guys that I always got along with, Richie. He came in, not that Richie, older Richie. And he was like, huh, that's something I've never seen before in this house. So you can still draw a pretty straight line between who I was at the end of freshman year and who I am now. And going through college, there's nothing different. I mean, oh, that's not true. There is a lot different, but there's still a seed that was planted in high school that is, it's on its way. Simply for the third thing, I guess, never expect to know everything once you've graduated, because I didn't. You know, I know so much, and again, this is not bragging rights at all, but like, I feel much more aware of things, much more clinical, much more, a little bit sharper than I was when I graduated, in a way that, I mean, you just get with time, you just get with age. And I think anybody going into college thinking they're going to be a better person or the best person they'll ever be by the end of it, it's like, I still know a lot of people from Santa Clarita that legit think that. And now that they're my age and they're on like kid number two or three. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You know, and their husbands look like they could be their twin brother.
Ew.
I kid you not. On top of college stuff, this is also an episode where I'm just going to be throwing out a lot of truths of things I've noticed and learned and observed that are all abso-fucking-lutely based in reality. By the time this episode drops, I'll be 29.
Yeah.
Buried the lead on that one. Sorry, folks.
I got to direct this question towards Matt. Because you never were involved in this kind of extracurricular life, were you? You never rushed, anything like that.
I did rush a cinema fraternity, but...
What?
I did.
So you got to walk me through that, because we have business fraternities, right? And they are strictly, as the name implies, business. It's probably more networking than the social fraternities even promise you in the realm of networking. Mm-hmm. What is a cinema fraternity?
Well, I never got to figure out the full thing of it because this one person, I think she was part of the board at the time. Her name was Destiny, and she was a little bit of a and I found out later on that she, when they were discussing whether or not I would continue on, she's like, yeah, I never liked him, so why the fuck did we even let him rush or pledge?
Oh, they were talking about you.
Yeah, me. No, my other friend Tim was our class president for our pledge class. And like, he was trying to like be involved. And she's like, I don't like him. He's too ambitious. Don't let him in. And so they kicked me and Tim out. And then after that, like the rest of the pledge class who we got pretty close with, most of them just decided, fuck it, I don't want to be part of this. No, yeah. I'm leaving.
Stage a little bit. So a lot of them,
like, even if they got bids, they're like, no, I don't want to be part of your organization. You're clearly a really shitty branch of this organization. And it started at USC too. I believe Spielberg and Lucas were part of the founding class of DKA.
Really?
Yeah, I believe so. I have the pledge book and I have the beret somewhere in the fucking... You had to wear the beret on campus on certain days.
The beret? They couldn't just
wear
give
a fucking beret around campus.
They couldn't just give you something innocuous like a pin? Like
no,
every
it was the most
other
pretentious fucking pledge thing. Like one of our, like I didn't get to, they scheduled this over Easter, so I didn't get to be fully part of it, but you had to like make a film in a day, which was cool. Like you had like 24 hours to make a film. That's cool. That's like applicable, but then the beret shit's just like, oh, you're just trying to humiliate us.
That is some JROTC shit, and you know that.
Oh, yeah, no.
Way more.
We didn't have any hazing, thank God. And I never understood the culture around hazing. It's stupid. Like you might kill someone and get your whole organization shut the fuck down. So why are you even doing this? But,
Yeah, Andrew, you missed that conversation where I talked about you and that whole experience.
Oh, boy. Sorry for the lateness, guys. Yeah, that was an ordeal.
Tweak the volume just a wee bit.
Yeah, one moment. I'll tweak it here, but I don't even remember what...
Tweak it like a nipple.
I'll tweak it.
I don't even remember
I'm
what...
I'm tweaking, bro. I'm tweaking.
Just tweak it a little bit more. Just a
minute. Oh man, I'm all the way up.
Yeah, there you go.
I think that's fine.
Good.
That sounds
fine. Ryan's just being picky.
Little just because this episode's about you doesn't mean you get to control everything.
Yeah, man. Happy
asshole.
Birthday.
Anyway, yes. Back to my story, Ryan.
Yeah.
God damn it. I chime up for once. And then no, it's like Ryan gotta say no, tweak it more to my liking. Anyway. But the next year that one of my friends did join DK, and I was like, I didn't like have any reservations about people who like decided to join. Like, you're not a fuck. I'm like, you're a fucking scab. No, didn't happen. But he had a friend who I actually eventually became friends with because we were in the same film class at one point. But she had like some unspecified like disability, like maybe some like mental health thing that apparently they didn't let her join because she had that disability.
Ooh, that's...
I don't know the full story behind that. I got different stories from different people. Mm. Obviously, like, people on her side are like, yeah, no, they did the same thing again. Other people are like, no, she was like making shit up and didn't want to join. So I mean, from my personal experience, that leadership was not the greatest. Anyway,
yeah,
that's my experience with rushing. And then the thing is, like, later on I like found actually a decent group of like a more of a social frat, but like one of the quote unquote bottom tier frats. They didn't have a house, but they had an apartment, which like they were always really cool. I can't remember which frat they were, but they were always cool. And then like a couple of them were in camp with me and they offered me a bid. Like I didn't even rush, but like, hey, we think you're cool. You want a bid? I'm like, I'm too broke from when I rushed the cinema fraternity and I don't want to have to pay dues no more. So I'm sorry, but no. But it's like, yeah, okay, that's cool. You can still come to any events you want to. Like, we don't care. We just thought you'd be cool to have you in. Like, yeah, that's cool. So if only they'd gotten to me first.
Like, see, at that point, you come to a level of association where, and we had a couple guys like this, where they would just come. They were non-affiliated. They were great guys, would come around a lot. Either they considered rushing and didn't because of either monetary reasons or...
It's fucking expensive.
Honestly, I'm just going to say monetary reasons. It's not like they didn't vibe with us. It was it gets expensive. It does. And they would just come around. They would have all the rights and privileges. I mean, half the time they knew the inner workings. And that's all I'll say, because it's like, you don't think that someone non-affiliated would get this level of close, but they do. And I think that's what kind of makes the bond a little bit tighter. You know, I mean, oh, what? You don't get to wear the paraphernalia or whatever. It's
okay. No beret for you.
No beret. Like,
oh no, I'm so disappointed.
Yeah.
I'm just imagining, like, Matt, if there was like an alumni event.
And yeah. Would you be invited
on? Like, you're an active member. You got your beret on. And
only,
George
only
Lucas
the
is there.
Only the pledges had to wear the beret.
Only.
The,
okay. Okay. Well, I'm just thinking,
actual,
like,
do you do the I don't know if it's like security forces in the Air Force, but like when you become like a higher ranking official, do you like tip it up to like, you know how like with pledge pins, you can either like tilt it a certain direction or I guess just take it off, because why would you want to wear it in the first place? Like, could you do something cool with it to signify that you're an alumni? Or were you just like, fuck it, throw it in the fire?
I threw it in. I don't know. I as soon as like I was kicked out, what did I do? I think I just threw it in a bag and just tucked it out of sight. Same with the fucking pledge manual, which I'm never going to look at again.
But I'm just thinking of like some kind of alumni event where for some reason the alumni are wearing their berets. You've got yours going one way. George Lucas has it going the other way, and he's just like, oh, hey, you're not wearing your beret properly. Do you know the handshake?
Yeah, and you sold to Disney.
You don't know. You got your beret wrong. You don't know the handshake.
Okay. At that point, I would look at George Lucas, and I would say, you talentless fucking hack, and walk away.
Yeah, and then he'd do this, and you'd be like, sorry, yes, sir.
Sorry, reflex.
You know how I feel about
I've been sitting on that gag for like 10 minutes.
That's why I have this light up pen, you know? You never know. Drew, I got to ask, because we always want to include you in these kinds of discussions. You never went down the rushing process, did you?
Yeah, I rushed one frat, and they wanted me within like 2 hours, and I knew it was not a good sign. So
oh god, I knew Kappa Sigma was bad, but I didn't think it was that bad. Kidding.
I wish it was. I knew it was.
Oh, wait, I think it might have been Kappa Sig. That might have been the one I rushed. No, not the one I rushed. The one that wanted me.
No hate. I just it's one of those things where it's like
it was definitely Kappa Sig.
There is always a house, whether it be fraternities or sororities, that always try to like they really want you, but translated, they want your money. And whether they're hemorrhaging money or they just, I don't know, can genuinely tell if you're a good person within a 2 hour time span. Cool. What great judges of character. So,
well, I can safely say that the organization I joined, it was like a character thing. My dad's fraternity, though, it literally was just, we really like you, but we don't care. We want your money. And it was kind of like, all right, I'm out.
See, back then, I feel like you could get away with doing that because if you're already so wide-eyed in college, I feel like you gravitate towards the first house anywhere that gives you a chance, regardless of what the pledge process is, regardless of the people that you know or don't know yet, you know, you get to know. And I mean, it contributes a lot negatively to people who really look within themselves alongside the throughout the process where it's like, wow, it really doesn't matter what I look like, what I talk about, what I sound like it's all about the organizational clout. Like all I want to do is just be backed by an organization through hell or high water. And it's detrimental to people who don't stop and think about how you lose yourself, your sense of identity doing that. So, I mean, I don't mean to grandstand. I've just seen it happen. Like they become unrecognizable at the end.
Oh yeah. So two of you guys knew me in college, one at the very end, one for the first half. I don't know, Drew, do you have any like thoughts or questions for me about my time in higher ed?
You know, I don't even know if I know the reason why you chose CSUN.
What are you going to say? What are you going to say, Sebastian?
I mean, Matt's coming in here with the clout drop name drop in USC, although yeah. I know that's not where you went. So I'm wondering if he's silently judging us being like, oh, a state school?
Nah, ew. I know. To CSUN and I applied to a lot of CSUs because the money was easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I went.
In a weird way, distance really had to do with it. It was a combination of distance, but also familiarity, just because I think I've said it before. My dad went to CSUN. He still remembers when the part of the school that Manzanita Hall is located. He still remembers when that was just a huge field. And not like a football field or anything, although he did play football on that lawn, but it was just this big stretch of green, and him and his fraternity brothers would play football and hang out and do whatever on that part of the school. But yeah, you know, he went, his best friend who, you know, I grew up knowing, you know, basically an uncle, they were pledge brothers in the same fraternity that I didn't join because they sucked. But
yeah, they were also off campus when we were there.
Well, it was my semester that they got booted.
Yeah.
And to go back to what I said earlier about the one guy from the fraternity being like, you know, are you a spy? You work for the school newspaper? And I'm like, no, dude, I work for the school newspaper, but I legit want to join you.
Yeah, dude, KGB. How'd you guess?
Supposedly, somebody from the school tried rushing for their fraternity and ratted them out when they decided to, you know, there was a whole hazing incident. And basically, they said it to the school and bada bing, my dad's fraternity was, you are terminated. That was that. You know, I mentioned distance. I mean, part of it was just kind of, in a way, convenience. Mainly because I knew, well, for one thing, like, I shouldn't say it's the biggest reason, and this is where it becomes a weird answer, but part of it was that I knew I'd get out of Santa Clarita, and I did. Hallelujah. And
be quiet, Ryan. You know you love this town.
Awesome town can...
God, he won't shut up about it. It's
awesome
like...
town can suck... but, you know, I...
That's how much he loves it. He wants to literally make love to this town.
No. Oh, yeah, Santa Clarita. Put the lotion in the basket.
Oh, God.
It's relatively close to my parents' house, and the first year I'll commute. Second and third year, I'll live on campus. Third year, I'll figure it out when I get closer to it. And that's exactly what happened. And I think one reason that I look back on it, and frankly, I don't regret, and it's weird because, you know, this incident that kind of reinforced why I thought it was a good idea to go to CSUN due to distance, one of the many factors that went into it was just simply the fact that my dog was getting up there in years, and I loved her very much. And, you know, I wouldn't have been able to live with myself if I was, like, I don't know, in name any state. Like, if something happened, like, I couldn't have done it. So, little did I know that something would happen within my first semester in college, but, and in a lot, that, you know, I said earlier, death in the family, well, that was the death in the family, so... It's also what made me what I was at the start of my sophomore year, which I'm sure Andrew remembers, regrettably. A lot of people probably remember from CSUN, regrettably. And then by Halloween, I was basically back to how I've always been. And how, for the most part, I still am. Face is a little different. Hair's a little different. A little older. There's a couple gray hairs.
He's not perpetually holding a bottle of Jack Daniels.
I got one over there, and I got one.
Oh,
over there.
I bet, yeah.
The one in the freezer has got a Ice King on it.
You can't escape the familia. So.
Oh wait, do you say Jack Daniels or Johnny Walker?
I mean, they're interchangeable.
You shut your mouth. No, they're not.
I didn't see one brother give any guff about exchanging one bottle for the other. Either that, or they were both smashed on the ground by the end of the night. So I don't want to hear it.
They're completely different. One's a Scotch. One's a Kentucky whiskey.
By Tennessee. Name. By name. I don't think anyone's going to be particularly picky. Tomato, tomato. It's brown liquid that makes you feel good. And it's going to be brown liquid soon with the Taco Bell run that people make at 2 a.m. Oh, God. That house was a fucking hazard zone. Like,
why are frat houses always disgusting?
You know, and I've told a couple stories here, but Mancini, I really need to know if anything you've experienced tops what I've experienced, because you have way more years under your belt. And the only rule I will say is that it can't involve the roommate who shall not be named. Although I think you do have a good amount of good stories about him too. I mean, that house was disgusting. It always was. It always has been. And throughout, and since, I want to say since 1898, it's been disgusting. So what do you got?
in terms of like what I saw when I was there?
Sure. I mean, did you do anything? Did you see anything?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
as Renfield said in Dracula Dead and Loving It, I saw nothing. I saw nothing. Closes the door. I saw everything. Love that movie. Great movie. Good Mel Brooks movie. Fushta. I don't know. Believe me, when I got into that walk-in closet that was my room with no window for almost a year. Yeah, Andrew, that was my life. I don't know. I got a carpet cleaner. I had to live with all the charcoal burns in the carpeting because somebody had their hookah in there and all the charcoals would fall off. And so there's like these little burnt toast squares in the ground that you'd like hurt your foot and be like, oh no, is it a splinter? Is it a bug? Oh no, it's just the carpet with the burn marks, you know.
That you'd never dare to walk barefoot on.
Yeah.
Can someone please explain to me why frat houses are so nasty and sorority houses are so goddamn clean? Besides like the fact that they intentionally make sure the parties are at the frat houses and not at the sorority houses.
So
sorority houses are clean?
They clean with the blood cleaner. Of their members. Fun fact.
They clean with what?
With the blood of their members.
Oh, yeah. That's true. I mean, it is lack of care. Like, lack of physical care.
I saw a fire behind the house once. Because of a firework. A firework went off. I was in the shower. The president was in a separate shower. I want to put that on the record because... Every time I've said this story, people are like, wait, Ryan, were you in the shower with the president? And I was like, no, I was taking a shower in my bathroom. He was taking a shower in his bathroom. We didn't see anything. And then all of a sudden, it's like 9/11 movie with Nicolas Cage.
I can continue this story. Fun fact, I could actually continue this story. I think I was there. So what had happened was...
In the shower with Ryan or with the president?
Make of it what you will. No, I was in the backyard and we were actually lighting fireworks. And what we did was our backyard
after
was
after the 4th of July.
Was it after the 4th of July or was it 4th of July?
It was after.
Okay. Maybe this is a completely different story, but the way I remember a 4th of July at the house, our backyard was a tennis court. So, you know, the chance of anything catching on fire, besides the 8-foot tall trees that our neighbors had, just keep it outside that area or keep it inside that area. We had these little metal pylons sticking out of the ground where you could attach a fence post to, and they were hollow up to a certain point. Brothers would stick trash in here throughout the years until you only had about a beer bottle's worth of empty space. So what does the president at the time do? But light a fucking M80 and stick it in this little hole here. And we're thinking, oh, it's going to shoot up in the sky. It shoots up maybe 4 feet and it just explodes at eye level. And I remember that I had a date at the time who I brought over, and she's like, what are you guys doing? And I'm like, just watch. And we're expecting it to go things. Yeah, we're expecting it to go up into the sky. It goes up about 4 feet. It hits the back door windows, like the blast does, and she's just like, wow, that's loud. And I mean, I knew immediately that she wasn't the one, but you know what, it's, hey, take what you can get. I think no one ended up having to go to the hospital, thankfully, but no. it was pretty bad, the fact that we were so risky with that.
You guys didn't pee on the side of your house, right?
I can't attest to that. You're going to have to take the stage, right? I mean, I'm sure it happened.
Well, I mean, at parties, like, there were what? 3 bathrooms? And most of the time you're only allowed in, like, maybe two of them?
No, there were 2. And one of them was always closed. And that was the upstairs bathroom that led into other people's rooms. There was always
There was the one downstairs.
One downstairs always
that led
full.
To the backyard. That was always full. There was the one upstairs adjacent to my bedroom/closet. where the door always, was off
always closed, though, because someone was puking in there.
Well, that, but also the guys that were living in the adjacent room never wanted anybody in there, so they didn't get into their room, so they'd lock their door. And then there was the time where they locked the door, and then they couldn't get back in because nobody had a key, so somebody had to climb through the window and literally break down the door.
I
got to watch it.
I had to replace that door, thanks.
And then the front door to that bathroom was off its hinges. So, like, there were times where it was like for a short time, my girlfriend at the time was living with us, and it was literally just because she wrapped up her summer school, you know, study abroad thing, because she was from another country, and she stayed at the house for like a week, and there were literally times where I had to like guard the door while she was using the bathroom so that like nobody came in while she was using the bathroom, because that door, you literally could just push the door and it would just go flonk on the ground. And I still vividly remember one time, like, I'm in there doing my business, and the young lady who would one day become my sister's big sis is like trying to get in, and it just turned, it was straight out of like some movie with Seth Rogen where she's like sputtering and kind of screaming and like, and I'm just like, you know, because it's like, hey, I'm almost done here. Do you mind? I pay to live here. Do you mind? The third bathroom was in the president's room.
And that one was just inaccessible. Yeah. Because that door was always closed.
Yeah. Because the president was doing flabbergabbing. So, you know, it's just like, I mean, if you needed to go to the bathroom, minus number two, or you needed to throw up somewhere, there's a lawn, there's a side of the house.
Which we had to clean and paint. And
now, wait, what, we've gone all over the place. What was your question again? Why did I live in the house? Why did I choose to? What did I see?
Yeah, well, I guess I was really just toppling. Well, I was trying to find a story that would topple all the others, but I feel like collectively, it's like the sum, not the sum of all parts, but like the parts are better than the sum, if that makes sense. Like each story is its own individual thing that could probably top the next story.
Well, the one thing that I always tell people is the very last party that I was at as an active. The one where Sebastian brought me over as an alumni, and let's just say my sister makes bad cocktails.
She also didn't want you there to begin with.
And she also didn't listen to the little green army man from Toy Story, which is a good soldier never leaves another man behind. Takes my next step in the family tree. The two of them go home, you know. Meanwhile, they leave me there, and I'm like, hey, guys, I woke up, and I feel better than I did last night. Where are you? Like, wow, okay. I am literally two different people, one that I'm actually related to. I am both of your older brothers, and you've, like, abandoned me. Like, but before that, what had happened was, it was the very last party, and I guess we were just too damn loud. The music was too damn loud, and the rent was too damn high. At some point, police officers came into the house, and a bunch of people
into
the house.
Did they have to name five brothers? How'd they get in?
I mean, hey, LAPD, they can do whatever they want, folks. But I had like a gaggle of people following me back to my bedroom, including my younger brother and other people. I don't have a brother, folks, but like my little bro, as they say. Taylor's going to laugh at me for that one. But, you know, what happened was that we all get into the walk-in closet. I just flop on my bed. You've got like a couple supporters that, you know, they're sitting, or sorority sisters that are like sitting on the ground, and they're kind of like, you know, oh man, the party's over. Oh boy. Hey, can I take some of that? Thank you. Thank you. And my little bro's just like walking back and forth and just like, nah! And you know, I'm laying on my bed basically thinking, damn, I was 2 days from retirement. And also I can't help but think to myself, police officers have raided the building, and a bunch of us are basically hiding in the attic, and we are a Jewish fraternity.
God.
So I'm just like, if there was ever a way for my years in college to end, this is it. And then I had a half-assed gonzo trip to Lake Havasu that is so forgettable that I have to remind myself to remind myself.
I remember it.
It wasn't as classic as the prior formal that I went to years earlier. But I mean, overall, you are right, Sebastian. Like, there is a lot of it that, like, it does just kind of grow off of itself. I mean, yeah, like, I don't know, the Times playing Grand Theft Auto Classic. Yeah. I know you know that. Election night 2016, my bedroom basically became the Situation Room. Have I even ever told this story before on the show?
You will now.
Oh, geez.
I remember election night 2016. I was working, but no one was at the store because it was election night. So I just took.
I had mock trial practice, and when we found out things went wrong, we were like, you know what? Fuck it. We're not practicing tonight. Let's go home and drink.
Same. Pizza party gone wrong.
Pizza party.
Yeah. I get back to the house, and you know, it's already like early nighttime, and there's a whole bunch of guys that are, you know, playing FIFA or whatever. And boy, did they love their FIFA. And I remember, like, as the hours went on, it really slowly became like we go from one extreme of World War II to the other. It was like we were in the London Underground, because it was just like you had a bunch of guys staring at a screen, wires everywhere, there's bongs everywhere. Meanwhile, you go over to my bedroom and there's maybe, I don't know, three or four people with their laptops out looking at different electoral maps, which I never thought I'd see from any other computer but mine. And, you know, there's beers everywhere. Again, there's people are passing bongs around. You know, I'm at my desk. I got my laptop in front of me. I got phone in one hand, Johnny Walker Black Label in the other. And the night just commenced the way that it did. And I just remember the guys in the other room playing FIFA were like, I gotta get over here to do it. They're like, hey, Mancini, did Hillary win yet? And I'm like, not yet, guys, not yet.
I can just imagine one brother in particular, who shall not be named, who I don't even know if he lived in the house at that point, as soon as he saw the election results, was just like, fuck! As if he just didn't do this on a normal basis.
Yeah, I don't think he was living at the house at the time, okay. But yeah. I don't remember. But regardless, like, as the hours went on, it became pretty clear who was going to win.
Mm.
And everything just sort of devolved into this, like, hedonist, borderline bohemian kickback that we never had on a Tuesday. But hey, do as the song says. But it just kind of descended, and I did too, where, you know, at some point I think I cracked open a 40 that I was saving specifically for St. Patrick's Day. And then, like, it basically turned into, it's a scene in Frida when, like, she's living on her own after she's separated from Diego and from Diego Rivera. And, like, she's, like, yelling at people drunkenly to just get out. Cause she's got all these, like, lowlifes around her home, and, you know, she's cut her hair, she's wearing all black. I think La Llorona is playing in the background by Chafela Vargas. And it's just, like, the lowest point in her life. And instead, this was, like, if there was ever a moment for me to start becoming an existentialist, that should have been it. And it arguably was. It was actually a breakup later that kind of did that. But, and also just life in general. Between work and random-ass people committing suicide, including Anthony Bourdain, who I wasn't a fan of at the time. Well, thought he was cool. Didn't know him.
Blasphemy.
Yeah, I mean, and then the next morning, and this is the epilogue I always love giving. I mean, yeah, the next day, Young Turks came over. It was a shit show, but I got to cover it. That was fun. For a while, I was technically on YouTube until the Young Turks took that video down because that video had more dislikes than likes. And part of that was just because of all the back and forth going on about the Armenian genocide. And it's like, guys, a walking 6'3" Cheeto just became president, and we're relitigating history. Like, please. The real epilogue to that was the following morning when, not the roommate who must not be named, but a different roommate who also very much should be named, but I won't. My roommates that year, it was like Defense Against the Dark Arts and Harry Potter. It was like one roommate would come in who would have some horrible reason to leave. Another roommate would come in, had a horrible reason to leave. The third one stayed, but I'll leave it at that. I wake up and I'm just laying there because I'm like, am I still living in the world that I was living in last night? And my roommate gets up. He gets up on the edge of his bed. I'm still laying on my back. And he's like, oh God. Did Donald Trump still win last night? And I'm laying there and I'm like, oh, I don't know. Let me check my phone. And then we hear a noise, and that's because the one MAGA brother in the house took it upon himself to clean every orifice of the house, something I never saw him do during our pledge semester, and he was so motivated by Trump winning that he decided to do this at like 9 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday, and I had like a late class that morning, so I didn't get into... I didn't get to campus until, like, I don't know, 11:15 or whatever, 11 o'clock. So, but yeah, it was just, like, one of the most, it was all so surreal. But, you know, I mean, you want to talk about something where, you know, you're thinking to yourself, boy, am I glad I was there than anywhere else? Honestly, yeah. Not just because it makes for what I think is a good story, but, you know. If anything, it went to show me that even people that weren't as interested in politics as I was at the time were just as nervous as a lot of Americans were.
That was your 9/11. I mean, that's like, because I was thinking, I'm just like, I'm sure you don't remember where you were at 9/11, right?
I do.
I was three.
I
was Matt. Picture day.
Wow.
Did you still smile?
I did, because I didn't know what the fuck was happening.
So I definitely knew. I know I mentioned this, I think, on our 20th anniversary episode of 9/11. Yeah. School was canceled that day. My dad was traveling in London for work. And my grandmother was with us. And then all of a sudden, before we knew school was canceled that day, we saw what was happening on TV. And, like, I remember looking at the burning buildings on the television when we were living in Burbank. My sister doesn't remember it, and she's a year younger than Sebastian. And if anything, the scariest part, and this was something that it didn't really register to me too, well, it did. Shoot. My dad was gone, and, you know, there's planes crashing into buildings, and I'm like, my dad went on a plane. What's happening? You know, and, you know, I remember we got up together a banner that we hung out in front of the house, basically saying, you know, welcome home, Dad, or something like that. And I know my mom tied the banner down using the kind of string you'd use for wrapping up a Christmas present, and my Hot Wheels cars to like anchor it down. So, and then whatever it was, 19 or 20 years later, we did the exact same thing when, you know, my dad basically retired. So, but yeah, that was, This is all Mancini trivia.
Yeah, I should have asked, where were you when George Harrison died? I mean, this is like a few months later, but yeah. It's crazy. That's crazy circumstances.
What other like random trivia comes to mind? I know we started off heavy with college, but I don't know.
That was a heavy ending. I mean, how many other? This is totally off beat, but how many other Mancinis have you met, and have you ever met a Ryan Mancini?
So apparently, there's a handful of Ryan Mancinis in Massachusetts. And I won't give away my source, but when I found that out, I was kind of like, oh, okay. I'm trying to think of other Mancinis I may have met. I know my sister did. There were, I think, triplets with the same last name, but they were Filipino. So you'd look at like the four pictures in the yearbook and you'd get the first two kids from the triplets, then my sister, and then the third triplet. And I'm sure people were looking at that going, one of these is not like...
What happened in that family?
I don't know. Otherwise, I'm trying to think. I mean, when I was in Italy, I don't think we ever met or saw anyone with our last name. I never had like a...
Now, yeah. What do you think of Henry Mancini?
I like him. I think he's a great composer. I know at one point he did a cover, it sounds weird, but he did the Star Wars theme, and honestly, it sounds... If they had gotten him for a Star... Well, okay. I wouldn't say if they got him for a Star Wars movie, it would be like, oh, this is amazing, but certainly his rendition of the Star Wars theme is... very memorable, very, I don't know, if you plug that in at the start of a movie, number one, I don't know if anyone would notice, but I think people would be like, wow, this is very different, and way better than the flimsy one that they used for The Force Awakens. And that was still John Williams. So.
If Star Wars didn't exist, what would be your biggest, fanboy franchise?
Man.
I'm going to say Doctor Who? Nah.
No. That was something I got into when I was a sophomore in high school. Like, I literally woke up one morning, and I had a date that day. And I like, turned on the TV, and I'm flipping through the channels, and then BBC America is playing. And it was one of the season one episodes with Christopher Eccleston. And... like, at some point, he's dealing with these, like, fat, farting aliens, and they've taken over 10 Downing Street, and then they blow up, and then he's like, you know, oh, off to new adventures. And the very next episode was the episode where he encounters what he thinks is the last surviving Dalek. And that episode, number one, I felt like there was something with the Dalek where I thought, I feel like I've seen this before, and I feel like I've always known what it is, and I've always loved it. I don't know what the hell this thing is. And that's probably some latent memory from like Looney Tunes Back in Action where there are Daleks in that movie. Yeah. And then like they just kept marathoning the series up until season 6 started. And I mean, by the time I got to like, you know, I don't know, the middle of the David Tennant run, I was like, oh, this is great. I don't know. What would it be? I don't know. Maybe I would have gotten more into Batman. Which still happened, but I mean, if anything, the thing with Star Wars that always got me was, you know, I think if anything, it's all the characters, you know, it's the worlds, it's, I'll go on record as saying it, like Yoda's one of my favorite characters in all of fiction. There's a reason why so much of it is iconic, and especially, you know, I was 2 when I saw Star Wars, and it was just like, you know, mind-blowing, like this whole world and the ships and lightsabers and I don't know, that's I'm stumped on that one.
And the Eagles doesn't count.
No, oh god, no. Nah.
I don't know, man, there's like a career out there for you, like Star Wars Eagle-ologist or something. Like, there's some like ologist, if there's ever a Star Wars professor at a college, if there isn't already, you're it. If there's ever like a Eagles historian, like, man, these are like careers for you out there.
I mean, I'm even trying to think of, like, what's some other weird random thing about me or like from my history.
Yeah, like, who was your Hitchens before Hitchens? Who was your Eagles before Eagles? Like, I know there's, you know, stuff that you've replaced it with.
I think if you had to find, excluding the Beatles, if you had to find, like, the first band that for a while was my Eagles, it was probably ELO. I mean, I still love ELO to this day. I love everything Jeff Lynne did with that group. I'm like, this music can be real, you know, like it was a blast. And then I guess Hitchens before Hitchens, Russell Means, who, he was one of the leaders of the American Indian movement in the late 60s and then into the 70s. He was a civil rights activist and he later on became an actor and showed up in like the Disney Pocahontas, Last of the Mohicans. He was in Natural Born Killers. He's the Navajo guy in Natural Born Killers. So, and you know, I've got his book, Where White Men Fear to Tread. Towards the end of his life, he kind of, I didn't know what InfoWars was, but when he started showing up on it, I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then that Piers Morgan bit where he was like, you know, oh, here's the man who wants to deport me because of my position on guns. Ladies and gentlemen, Alex Jones, you know, and I'm like, wait, hold up. So,
well, how about who was your first impersonation? I feel like you have a lot.
And who's your favorite?
Oh, God.
I think your most iconic is your Arnold, I will say.
Well, you know, Arnold, he's a very iconic guy. You know, I am Arnold. He's me. I am you. You are not you. You are me. You know, I run around and I have a stogie in my mouth and I'm like, ha ha. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, hey, I'm in the Batman movie.
Thank you, Mr. Governator.
You're fantastic.
Now answer the question, please.
You're fantastic, Matt. I need...
Now, directing you back to my question, and Andrew's question, our question, our joint question, what was your first impression, and what do you think is your favorite? Answering in Arnold's voice, of course.
Oh, God. My first impression.
Was it Obama when you were in high school and just like, oh, I have... Okay.
Oh, I couldn't have done Obama. I couldn't have done my Obama impression that back then. Even when he was damn it, I got it wrong. Even when he was running against Mittens in 2012, I wasn't walking around saying, "Hey, kids, vote for me." Otherwise, they might make you wear Mormon underwear. No, I mean, I did George Bush before Obama. I even did George H.W. Bush before Obama. What was my first impression? My God. I mean, the thing that got me into, you know, impersonating people, just in general, it honestly started when I was a kid and I was just playing with action figures and I was, like, trying to do Darth Vader or Yoda. Like Star Wars in a weird way was kind of the thing that got me into doing voices because I was like, could I replicate that? Could I try that? And, you know, and then it moved on to, like, other toys I was playing with as a kid, like Transformers, like, oh, could I do Peter Cullen, you know? And then what happens when I, like, mishmash all the figures with each other, you know? Yoda, what are you doing over there? Go away! My home, this is... I don't know. Yeah, I don't. I can't answer that one. I really have no idea. But I mean, my favorite. I mean, Arnold. Come on, Arnold's so easy to do, especially, you know, when you're younger and you do the Arnold impression. You just go around and you think it's all like this. Who are you? I'm me. And then you realize as time goes on, he's a little bit more thoughtful, a little more methodical. You know, it's like, hi,
This is Arnold with NPR. Nice to meet you. We're going to pump iron together, but we're also going to talk about books and politics. It's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic.
I mean, Arnold reigns supreme. Even Richard Nixon. I have fun with too, because like people just forget how much of a freak Richard Nixon was. Like, this was a guy that just... And it's, again, like, not to already talk about Rick Perlstein, but, like, you read Nixon Land and you get the paranoia of this guy so much more that, you know, when you're doing the Richard Nixon voice, and you're walking around telling people, hey, get out of my way, or I'll kick your ass so hard, you'll find yourself all the way on the other side of Massachusetts. Or, like, it's... Like, what person would walk up to you and talk like that? And then, you know, you've got his little freaking war criminal of a Secretary of State basically just... And this is where you can throw Arnold into the voice, kind of, where it's basically, yes, Mr. President, we're going to bomb Cambodia, and then we're going to go to Chile, and then we're going to do this, and then, oh, by the way, Mr. President, the Pink Panther diamond has been stolen, and I got to be in the movie... And so does Gerald Ford. And by the way, you're not president anymore. They did a Pink Panther movie where they got the best doubles for Gerald Ford and Henry Kissinger. And I'm like, this is a Pink Panther movie. What is going on? And like, Gerald Ford's bedroom is all football themed. And he's having a dream. And he's like, come on, coach. You can let me in. Come on. Come on. I'll do it. And then the phone rings. And he's like, and he drops his phone. And then he picks it up. And he's like, what?
Your other political figures, like your Slavoj Zizek and Jordan Peterson. So I feel like you're pretty partial to those.
I mean, I've not read any Zizek, which I'm still kind of amazed by that. But like, yeah, I don't know. I think part of that, the other thing too that's helped me with Zizek and Arnold, and I guess to some degree Yoda, is just that I've heard other people, including professional voice actors, do impressions of those characters and people. And I'm thinking that's either spot on to a point where I think I can replicate it, or I'm thinking to myself, it still sounds like you, you know, like I hear Yoda in Clone Wars and I'm like, it still sounds like, what's his name? Tom Kane. Like it's still... There's still a disconnect there, whereas I hear Matt Crispin from Chapo
rub his nose, and then all of a sudden he's talking about Lacanian politics.
And, you know, and with Peterson it's easy because it's basically just sad Kermit the Frog. The Lobster, doing political figures, you know, if I had a nickel for every time going over to Taylor's family's house and, like, she's got, like, friends of her parents that just, they want to just run the gamut and hear me just go off with voices. I mean, we went to Connecticut a few weekends ago, and we were with her former college roommate and her boyfriend, and I just ran the whole list. Like, I think I went as far back as FDR.
Oh my God, man.
It was just like... You know, and the guy didn't expect any of it. It just kept going and going. And I don't know, I just kept having fun with it. So, and if anything too, like, I really do look at people in history from a very, I don't know, kind of Hunter S. Thompson perspective, where it's like, you got some people out there that were real weirdos and real freaks. And, you know, to capture that and to try and see how can I replicate that to really not only maybe appear a little bit exaggerated, but also have people think, wait, is this how they really were? And then I'm like, yeah, take a look. It's enough where, you know, it validates how I might feel or think about those person, but it also is another way of just kind of educating people, you know? So... Yeah, I mean, and I don't know. I mean, another easy person another favorite impression of mine's got to be, you know, Yoda. I think I've already done him like 3 times now, but no, it's I'll be impersonating until the end, until I drop. So
yeah, I know that. what happened to your first car, ever car?
My first car, what did happen to it? Well, I know my sister got it. I think ultimately it just got exchanged for a newer, like, Honda CRV, Civic, what? Wait. Is the CRV like a sedan or a...
It's a little SUV, yeah. So I guess just a ho-hum, no crazy first car stories. My car exploded on the highway, nothing.
Oh, I got one. Freshman year at CSUN, it's November. I'm still a wreck from what happened a few days prior to Thanksgiving with what happened with my dog. I had this psychology class like late in the afternoon. I hated the class. It was so boring. I was so excited for the class, and it was just the... Well, I go out to my car, and the car battery dies. And I'm thinking, wow, this has never happened before. What the fuck? So AAA, believe it or not, comes over within 30 minutes, jump starts the car. Then I start driving around trying to leave Northridge. The streets are so packed, I have never seen in my life anything like this between Northridge and Santa Clarita, unless there's like a wildfire. It was the day before Thanksgiving. So I'm dealing with all the holiday traffic, and what could be like a 20-minute, if I'm really lucky, a 15-minute drive between my parents' house and CSUN, it became a 6-hour drive. So I left Northridge at like around 3 o'clock, didn't get home until around 9 o'clock. It was that bad. And I forgot at what point it finally loosened up. The cars just did not move, and I'm thinking, boy, it's a good thing the engine's running.
Damn. Okay. Yeah, it sucks. did you ever play organized sports in any capacity?
I played t-ball in first grade, and I kid you not, the name of our team, the Eagles.
Of course. It's meant to be.
And I know in my parents' house there is a baseball card of me in my uniform that exists.
You gotta pull that one up.
Oh yeah.
What was the first ever piece of music you bought, whether it be CD, cassette, MP3?
This could be a dangerous answer. It either was the R. Carlos Nakai Quartet, which is basically this, like, he's a Lakota, like, flute player. This was like in the 90s, and he got these like three other instrumental musician guys together and was like, hey, you do a little jazz, you do a little this, I do my flute thing, let's see if we can make it work. And it's honestly great music to listen to. I mean, could it basically be elevator music? Sure. But, you know, I enjoyed it. It was either that or, Viva La Vida by Coldplay.
Okay. I was about to ask what's the most embarrassing. Just kidding. That's totally fine. But what was the one thing you look back and you're just like, oh man, I can't believe I was into that.
Star Wars? No, I'm just kidding. As weird as it sounds, well, I don't know if it sounds weird per se, but it did have an impact on me. But I mean, even like, it's weird. Even right now, like, before we started recording, I'm getting, like, echoes of it because there's new information about, like, one of its members, but, or one of its promoters, but part of me regrets ever getting into the whole, like, new atheism movement. That was basically, to explain it as quickly as I can, I know I've talked about it, I think, before on the show, but it came as a result of 9/11 and... basically a bunch of, like, libertarians and scientists and people that wanted to be the next Carl Sagan getting together and basically saying, you know, religion is the greatest threat to mankind, and, you know, the only thing that can stop it is science and reason and the Enlightenment. And this is how you get Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Daniel Dennett. I'm going to deliberately bury the lead on the other fourth horseman of New Atheism, as they're called, as those four are called. But I guess the fifth member, Ayaan Hirsi Ali, who is a refugee from Somalia. She, you know, grew up in a Muslim family. It sounded like it was a very conservative Muslim family. She's written a whole bunch of books about it. She has kind of gone towards the right in recent years, like a lot of these New Atheism guys did, which doesn't make sense because it's like you guys are embracing inherently liberal values, and yet, you know, a lot of basic things that are pushing the conversation forward in terms of equality, they're like, oh, it's the woke virus. Ugh. And Ayaan Hirsi Ali, who stands out from all of them because she's a black woman and not from Europe, like most of them are, she just recently came out saying she's a Christian, but based on the letter she's written claiming to be a Christian, it's basically for political reasons. So, and the whole movement, you know, it just kind of became this, like, big grift. And, you know, you've got people with just bad politics, you've got people that are transphobes, you got somebody like Sam Harris, who is so all over the place, and frankly was dead on arrival in terms of me really ever liking him, just because he was like, oh yeah, well, collateral damage in Islamic countries is totally acceptable when fighting terrorists. And it's like, no, absolutely not. Not to get into current events, but the fourth horseman, and if anything, this is kind of the one, I mean, in a lot of ways, it shaped a lot of my thinking. It grounded me, you know, it made, when I did realize I was an atheist, I was kind of like, okay, what do I do with this? And, you know, I started reading basically from the Four Horsemen. I got the four main books, read The God Delusion by Dawkins first. Second book, no surprise to anybody, was God Is Not Great by Christopher Hitchens. And the start of a beautiful friendship was born, Louis. So, yeah, it shaped a lot of my opinions on religion, but and on life in general, and even just how I say things, but, you know, I kind of look back on it, I'm like, ew, I liked that? Ew. Gross.
Ugh. Okay, it was a phase. It wasn't like a, you know, like an Infowar phase or something like worse.
No.
What was the, little dorky, who was the first person you ever voted for? What was the first election where you're like, I'm an adult, I can vote?
It was 2014, because I turned 18 December 2012. Sorry, Barack. But I don't know. It was a midterm, so I think voted for whoever wasn't the Republican in that election, who later on was like a repetitive loser in Santa Clarita. And he tried running again, in 2018. Easily lost. And all he could say was, our congressman keeps screwing Santa Clarita. He just keeps screwing Santa Clarita. He just keeps screwing America. And it's like, dude, say something. Stop repeating yourself. Yeah, 2014. And I voted in 2016. I'll keep that close to the chest. But you bet your bottom dollar I voted in that primary. So.
We're just kidding. Yeah. what was the first ever alcoholic drink you ever had?
Like a sip or just a drink in general?
Like
something ordered for me to consume.
Well, let's just say, well, I imagine everyone has a sip when they're growing up.
The first one is like an amalgamation of a bunch of them. Second one I've brought up several times lately because I'm going to Vegas in a very short period of time. Although by the time this episode has come out, I've already been to Vegas, so...
Yeah.
The curtain's been revealed! We're recording on Jim Morrison's birthday, not mine. But I remember several times as a kid when, like, my dad or my grandfather would have Coors Light or a Budweiser, and I just was like, oh, this is awful. And I still can't. There's a family friend of Taylor's that loves handing people Coors Lights, and I'm just like, mm-mm, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. And then when we were in Vegas, when I was a little bit older than those other times, we went to see the Cirque du Soleil Beatles show, Love, and, you know, you can drink anywhere in Vegas, practically. It's like Brazil. And he got this giant souvenir cup and got a huge Jack and Coke. And I, before the show starts, I'm like, oh, hey, can I try it? And I'm like, I don't know, 11. Hated it. But boy, oh boy, did he love it, and did he love the rest of the show because of that tall-ass drink. So, and I don't know, years later, I mean, it was probably a beer in Mexico, like, it's probably a Pacifico that I was like, hey, I'm 18, I can legally drink here. Giddy up.
Do I ask a Hinge question or an NPR question? It's like, what is your desert island disc? Like, let's say you had, like, 5 records to take or 5 books or whatever you want to do. Like, what are the ones you can't live without?
So, well, would it be 5, like, albums or 5 singles?
Let's say albums.
Okay. I would say, ooh. Well, 3 of them I've got hung up on the walls of my apartment, so that already answers that. Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars by David Bowie. L.A. Woman by The Doors. What? There's a thumb next to me. What did Zoom just do? Is it because I did this? What?
That was weird.
That's bizarre. Okay. Yeah, okay. Ziggy Stardust, L.A. Woman, Mind Games by John Lennon. Okay, that one's normal. That thumb is normal.
Yours was not normal. That was some supernatural.
Yeah. Goes without saying, Hotel California. And then a fifth one. Oh, a fifth one's got to be a Beatles album, of course.
Oh, which one?
I'm back at a point where I don't even know what my favorite Beatles album is. A long time ago, I used to say Sgt. Pepper. And then at some point, I said Abbey Road. I don't know. These days, I'm kind of feeling it for Magical Mystery Tour, even though it made for a terrible movie. And, I, you know, part of it, I think part of it is just like, I don't know, some of my favorite John Lennon Beatles songs are on there. You know, I Am the Walrus, All You Need Is Love, Strawberry Fields is my favorite Beatles song. I know it's a random weird song, but I just have always loved it. Not to mention there's a Beatles song in there that actually mentions Los Angeles, which is rare. And when I was younger, I didn't get it. I was like, is George Harrison saying there's a fog upon a lake? No, he's saying there's a fog upon L.A. in Blue Jay Way. It's weird. And I love the song in general, but just when I found out that's what the lyric was, I was like, huh? And then 5 books? City of Quartz, Letters to a Young Contrarian, those go without saying. Cosmos by Carl Sagan. I gotta have a novel in there. Catch-22. Because that's my favorite novel. It's hilarious. It's a great critique on capitalism and the military and warfare and society. Okay, that's 4. And then a fifth one. Oh, God. I think a fifth one would potentially have to be... For now, at least, I think the fifth one would potentially have to be... that's just it. These books aren't long enough, damn it. Open Veins of Latin America? Eh. No, I'll go with Days and Nights of Love and War by Eduardo Galeano. It's a thinner book, but it's like the closest he ever got to a memoir. And this was where he combined his journalism with his experiences in South America in a very lyrical way. And, you know, he's got a segment in there about you know, why he writes and why he talks about politics and culture. And I think I mentioned this in my last Proclaimer column, where a professor at CSUN that you and I both knew all too well, she gave me a collection of essays by George Orwell and recommended Politics in the English Language. And it was kind of like, I could tell it was kind of like a lesson of being like, you know, this is how you should be. But I think Galeano's writing on kind of the similar subject to be a little bit more heartfelt and to be a little bit more, just have a little bit more staying power to it, especially when, you know, he is writing from a life or death standpoint and writing for the most part for, you know, people that are living in abject poverty and giving them a voice. So, I know that was a longer answer than it needed to be, but those would be my five albums and five books.
All right, I got a last one. It's a little journalism-y, but why do you like the podcast?
Ooh. Oh, man, this is a perfect question for the end of the season. We're close. It's okay. You know, at the end of 2019, I was sort of at a point where I wasn't really sure if I wanted to continue doing journalism in a, you know, traditional sense, but I did know that there had to be some way where I could use my skills as a journalist, my knowledge, and also just the, you know, the fact that I enjoy, you know, public speaking. I kept thinking there's got to be a way I can channel that into something where I can, you know, potentially garner, you know, an audience of some kind. And, you know, I had done podcasting. First ever podcast I think I ever did was with you, for like one episode. And, you know, Sebastian and I sort of did a similar thing one other occasion after I graduated from college. And, you know, it really was just like, okay, this is going to be how I do journalism going forward. And plus, you know, I had a job that I loved at the time. It wasn't journalism. It wasn't a restaurant, but I loved it. And I thought, well, that can keep me stable. I can do this on the side, and then who knows if it gets bigger, if we have events, if we have live shows, you know, the sky's the limit, and I can use the skills that I've learned as a journalist to interview people, go to places, talk with people, get insights into the comings and goings of, you know, the art scene in Los Angeles. Great. And so that, if anything, was sort of why I thought of just doing a podcast with Sebastian initially. And then the world ended and it was like, how are we going to do this? So, and it carried on. And, you know, at the end of that year, when we did our sort of analysis on the 2020 election and I gave my spiel about what I thought was going to happen and, you know, condemned Donald Trump for what he had done as president up until that point, little did I know what was left for the rest of his term. But that was the closest that at the time I felt like I was going to get to journalism for a while, because I didn't know how long COVID was potentially going to last. And then literally a month later, I get a phone call saying, hey, do you want to be editor-in-chief of The Proclaimer? So what basically came out of an acceptance that, like, I don't know if I'm going to stick with journalism, but I'm still going to try to do it, just out of the blue led to me still continuing with it. And even after that, I still had crisis of faith or whatever. And then finally I realized again in 2022 that, like, no, I'm going to stick with this. And that's for the most part how that's what led me on the path along with you that led me out here to Massachusetts. So I just have fun with podcasting, you know, getting to be on Touchdowns and Tangents with Kenny and Pete, and when you've been on it, I don't know, I always had fun with it. I always felt like I could have good banter with just about anybody in a podcast, and it's, you know, if anything, it's an opportunity for me to just simply be more than just words on the page, I guess. It goes to a very inappropriate Gore Vidal line about things you don't refuse in life, and it's not television, but hey, I'll stick with podcasting. This was fun. 29, here we come. Well, folks, cat's out of the bag. We're kind of recording these out of order, but rest assured, 199, let the chaos begin. And by the way, it's on Christmas. Christmas special. Oh, yeah, that's a different thing. We haven't had that before, but stay tuned for that one, folks. And until then, take care.
Mars on Life is a podcast co-hosted by Sebastian Shug, Ryan Mancini, Andrew Martinez, and Matt Fernandez. If you like this episode, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite shows, as Mars on Life is available on Anchor, Radio Public, iHeartRadio, Audible, Spotify, and Podchaser. Find us on Instagram at Mars on Life Show to keep up with the latest news, episodes, and gratuitous updates on the Red Planet. Have a question, comment, or request? Email us at marsonlife@gmail.com, and we'll promptly get back to you. This show's artwork, titled Happy Mars, was drawn by Zachary Erbrick. Our show's regular intro and outro music is Space Explorers by the one and only Kevin MacLeod. Thank you for listening, and always remember, if you keep going, you'll make it to Mars.